News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. It is nearly 7 minutes after 8 o'clock right now, and we've got accidents all over the place with this rain that has rolled on through here this morning. It's going to get nice later, but that doesn't discount the fact that a lot of you are backed up with trying to get where you're going. So just pack your patience and hang in there. We'll try to keep you updated on what's what. 7 after 8 now, Dan and Dalton and Quinn Hillier with QuinnHillier.com is our guest this morning. And Quinn, with what's unfolding this morning in Baltimore at the harbor up there, it's pretty ironic what you were doing just a couple of days ago.
Well, I mean, this was a little private trip, but I can't imagine any harm being done by telling this story. Sure. I was on a boat with Robbie Gwynn, who was for 42 years ran tugboats and towboats on the river, and he was actually on the river all those years ago when the Amtrak train, I think it was called the Sunset Limited, went off the track because a tugboat had hit a little railroad bridge up at the 12 mile mark of the Mobile River, and Robbie had been on the river, had run into the fog bank and had stopped, and all the other boats had stopped, but this one boat kept going and took a wrong turn and hit the little bridge. Mm-hmm. And then Robbie was, you know, rushed to the scene, and his boat were fishing people out of the water. And you see just how, you know, these are big, powerful vessels, and that was a tugboat. This in Baltimore was a barge. Navigating can be tricky, and it's still not much of an excuse for whatever happened up in Baltimore. But what it actually made me really appreciate is just how skillful so many of these pilots, these boat drivers, are. That these accidents are so rare.
I agree.
It takes a lot of skill to get out there.
Yeah, and, you know, looking at this in this particular instance, this tragedy in Baltimore.
Some revealing video.
Well, yeah, and someone texted, I guess, pilot tugs aren't required in Baltimore Harbor. And you watch the video, there certainly was not a pilot tug alongside that barge. But you look at where this bridge is, and it's kind of like the last threshold there before they get into relatively open water there in Chesapeake Bay. So I'm not sure if maybe pilot tugs take them through the really tight portions of that, I think, Patapsco River. Is that how you pronounce it? But this is certainly beyond, you know, just the tragedy of the potential loss of life here. This is a major economic hit to Baltimore.
Yeah, because right now, Quinn, the video that Dalton pointed out to me, the first one I saw was at Fox News on their homepage, and it really didn't provide you saw it happen, but it did not provide the better view. The second one that Dalton pointed out to me, the camera was much closer to the bridge, and you could see that the vessel actually lost its power a time or two and was without power. Lights were off. So I guess with that being said, the ability to keep it on course.
Yeah.
They lost that.
And went directly into one of the support beams under the bridge.
Yeah.
So, and then you see almost the entirety of that 1.6 mile bridge just collapse right there.
Incredible.
Into the water. So
yeah.
This is a major, major deal this morning.
Horrible, horrible. Now, what I haven't heard is was there a major loss of life? Were there a lot of cars on the bridge at the time?
There were enough. I think that there was reports of. What's more remarkable to me is that there were two rescues. How in the world that happened? But I think one of the estimates was 20 cars were on the bridge at the time, the part of the bridge that was affected. Maybe some got over to the other side just in time and had no idea what was going on behind them.
Yeah.
My gosh.
So only a few cars actually went into the water.
Well, that's an early reports, yeah, but I think they're not real clear on all that, but I heard that as many as 20 went in.
Yeah, that's at least the latest from Reuters. That's what they're saying, that possibly 20 vehicles in the water. Quinn, let's talk about some of what you've written here over the last week or so, and I want to start with something that was a major topic in the legislative session this year, at least the first half, and that's school choice. And you've noted how on the national scale, Alabama school choice making a bit of news, but it's kind of a trend, right? We've seen more and more states sign up for school choice.
Yeah, I think that makes Alabama the 12th state to go to what's called universally accessible school choice, where eventually it's going to be basically open to every family in the state, and you can choose where to take the money to send your child to school. Mm-hmm. And look, this is something I have been pushing for since 1981.
Wow.
I wrote an essay on this way back in 1981, and this is back in the 80s. You know, all the intelligentsia were against this, against school choice of any kind. They said, oh my goodness, it's going to kill public schools, et cetera, et cetera. But the results have been really good. Almost everywhere it's been tried, the test scores have gone up, the measures of student character have gone up, fewer arrests, fewer
distractions,
less delinquency, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera. And it also sort of makes the public schools sit up and take notice and maybe work to compete a little, although in this case, in Alabama, they say they're not actually taking money away from the public schools. This is over and above. But look, I think anything that lets parents choose what's best for their child rather than a simple matter of geography and some arbitrary metric deciding where to send your child to school, I think anything that's not arbitrary, that gives options, choice, it empowers parents. And it makes them buy into the whole educational project, so they support it more, and the children feel that, and they take more pride in it. I think it's a great thing.
All right, so first of all, private schools have got to opt in, right?
Mm-hmm.
They can't be mandated by the government, state, or otherwise, you've got to open your doors to everybody.
Right.
So private. So what I'd like to see is in other places, in other states where this has happened, what was the percentage of private schools that did opt in? What was the number? What did the number look like of those who wanted to take advantage of that and actually join the program? What percentage of public school kids were comfortable doing that?
Well, again, every state does it slightly differently. I mean, mm-hmm. remember Alabama tried it last year in a slightly different format, and the legislature did not pass it, and then they came back and designed it differently. So,
do you like the design? Do you like this design of it?
Look, I like the design of almost anything that gives more choice to the parents. Okay. So, I could have taken last year's. I'll take this year's. If the money follows the choice of the parents, that is a good thing to me, as long as there are no, huge loopholes. Mm-hmm. And in this case, I think they were pretty careful. But the bigger story is that there's a war against parents from the national level, from the Biden administration and from the courts and from a lot of lefty, outside groups that are saying that parents don't have rights even over, even to know their own children's medical conditions, even to, the Biden administration coming down on the side of schools that will not tell parents mm-hmm. if their child is trying to transition to a different gender. And to me, that is the most appalling thing of all, this war on parents. The state, unless a court finds that there is abuse or neglect, the state has no business getting in between a parent and the child in some major matter like health, like psychology, like gender, especially medical procedures, transitioning, all this kind of stuff. No way. That is the very definition of an authoritarian government.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you're right. What they're doing in Alabama and then a lot of these other red states, it seems, kind of trying to claw back at least some of that power that has over decades slowly transitioned into the federal government's realm, where they have an outsized influence on things like schooling. But, Quinn, for some who are maybe wary of this school choice bill, this new law passed in Alabama, They're worried that this might bring more hands of the government into education. What would you say to people who are saying, okay, so now if the state government is doling out money specifically for this school or that school, what's next? Are they going to require a state-mandated test? Or what do you have to say to people who are worried that this would bring more government intervention?
Well, as far as I can tell, it doesn't. I mean, schools still, you know, private or public, right now are doing standardized tests, and this keeps that in place. But again, the money doesn't go directly to the school. It mm-hmm. follows the parents, and, you know, again, through various means. And so this is not like a direct grant to the schools where the feds can then come in and say, see, we're giving you money, now we're going to cut off the money unless you do X, Y, or Z.
Right.
So as long as the power is with the parents and not with the federal government, I do not see that as a big deal. Now, if some government figures out a way to try to horn in like that, I think it should be fought tooth and nail in court. And I think the government would lose.
What do you think this means as state by state starts to turn towards school choice? What does this mean for teachers' unions or some of these national schooling nonprofits? I mean, these are major hits to them, right?
Major, major, major entities. They're huge.
Well, you want to know what's an even more major entity is something that has been introduced in Louisiana, which is a great idea, which would say that no public sector union can collectively bargain with the government. It doesn't mean you can't join a union to do other things, but it would take collective bargaining away from these public sector unions, including the education unions. And this follows that there was a book out last year by noted centrist reformer Philip K. Howard that said this is exactly what should happen, that even Franklin Roosevelt and even AFL-CIO union national boss George Meany thought that public sector unions should not exist in a democracy, and there and there are all sorts of theoretical reasons why. If you take away union bargaining power, then you keep the employees from dominating the democratically elected officials who are supposed to be their bosses on behalf of the public.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, again, when you go into democratic theory, it's a good thing not to have the same people that are the employees also be the bosses. It doesn't make any sense. And so, you know, all across the nation, that's why they call states laboratories of democracy. Their red states are fighting back against the domination of the sclerotic power bases that for so many years have made governing very, very difficult.
You know, hats off to Louisiana. We'll see how that works out. Quinn, can you hang around for a little bit?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, Quinn Hillier, quinnhillier.com, and we will resume our conversation with him around the corner.
Yeah, we'll talk about that extraordinary judgment against Trump from Justice Engoron, and also Biden looking at his 2024 campaign and some thoughts Quinn had on that coming up on Mobile Mornings. Thanks, Kane. 824 FM Talk 106.5. Continuing our conversation with Quinn Hillier here in just a moment. First, the segment brought to you by the local personal injury law firm, Tobias & Comer Law. Some great folks there who have helped get fair compensation for hundreds of people in our area for decades. They've worked in their office down on Dauphin Street. At Tobias & Comer Law, they'll help guide you through your case from the time you first talk until it's over. They don't pass that responsibility on to some lawyer you've never met who may not even be from the area. From car to boating accidents, defective products to workplace accidents and maritime injuries, Tobias & Comer Law has seen it all. Their website is great, and it's full of useful information as well, tobiascomerlaw.com. You'll also find the phone number there for a free consultation any time of the day, 251-432-5001. That's 432-5001. Check them out online, tobiascomerlaw.com. Tech.com. Continuing our conversation with Quinn Hillier, writing for the Washington Examiner and also at QuinnHillier.com. And Quinn, all the talk yesterday was about former President Donald Trump and the $465 million bond judgment made against him. Now, yesterday, an appeals court lowered the amount for his bond to about $175 million, lowered it by about 62%. And Trump said he would make that payment with cash as collateral. But you write that that was an excessive judgment made against Trump in that particular case.
Yeah, and look, you readers, I mean, listeners, you know, will know that I'm no fan of Trump. But I said he was getting, and do believe, he is getting a raw deal here. I think that eventually, not just the size of the bond, but the size of the judgment will and should be reduced. There is no precedent for a judgment that high for a violation, a civil violation of that sort. And fair is fair. You can think really bad things about Trump, and I usually do, but what he was accused of doing did not have direct victims and was not did not benefit him anywhere near the extent of the size of the fine or the fee or whatever you want to call it. And I think it was a travesty of justice, and it was especially a travesty to have a bond so high before he even had the appeal. That basically that's like sentence first, verdict afterward, which is what the Queen said in Alice in Wonderland. It wasn't fair, and now he at least gets to afford to be able to do his appeal without his property being seized.
Yeah, and you know, this is bringing attention to something in our Constitution that hasn't been getting a lot of attention, and that's the excessive fines clause. And like you were saying, it has to be proportional, the fine, compared to the alleged offense. And I think a lot of people can see that this fine is completely disproportional,
yeah,
right, to whatever the victims had to go through. And like Quinn said, this is pretty much a victimless crime. Now, the excessive fines clause, though, that's kind of been something that's been on the back burner in courts across the United States for decades. We've seen more and more excessive fines. It's obvious the reason they had that in place in England and in the Constitution here, and that's because it can be used for partisan means, right? The courts can go after people who they don't agree with and try to take them out of the game by doing what they did with Trump and trying to get him cash strapped.
Well, that's one of the reasons they would have it. I mean, there are all sorts of reasons to have a prohibition against excessive fines, just like you have prohibitions against cruel and unusual punishment. Look, I think Trump violated the law technically, but again, the punishment should fit the offense. And in this case, it doesn't, and it's really obscene what they're trying to do to him. Just like in the case with E. Jean Carroll, who won a defamation case against him, which was related to the sexual assault case. The $83 million he was ordered to pay her for defamation is so beyond the pale compared to, say, okay, Johnny Depp and Amber Heard. Johnny Depp, had a huge reputation to be trashed, and yet he only got, less than a third of that from Amber Heard. Again, you got to be fair. You got to be, proportional.
Quinn, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
You got an article on the Washington Examiner, Biden-Harris second term. It's a nightmare scenario. You can read that from Quinn Hillier, too, or just go to QuinnHillier.com. Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5 in Mobile Mornings. Just thought about this. It's not that we have an award show just came through. Was it the Oscars? Was it the latest award show? Yeah, I think so. With the movies,
yeah. I don't even know anymore.
I don't think that I've ever been a fan of those shows, and I'm not, like, bashing them. I'm just saying, like, if I've seen a movie, I already know how I feel about the movie, and I'm good. If I haven't seen a movie, I'm not averse to reading reviews and, you know, getting an opinion of someone that... But once I've seen the movie,
yeah,
whatever the acclaim or the claims or the awards or the critics or whatever, I don't care anything about that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I experienced the movie. I thought it was great or I thought it was okay or whatever.
I guess as much as any normal American who turned a TV on Sunday nights or whenever they would have these award shows, I guess I was involved, right, for years. You know, I would get excited about the Oscars or the Grammys.
Yeah.
And I think most of that revolved around whoever was going to be the host. Because, you know, they used to make a big deal about pretty much all of these major award shows. Oh, Chris Rock is going to host this one.
Yeah,
You know,
now it's so hard to be a comedian at those things.
Yeah. So I don't know. I guess I haven't really watched any of those award shows in years, but I'm not sure when. Right. When was it that I and the rest of America went, yeah, it's just not worth it anymore?
Yeah, I don't know. I was just thinking about that. I heard somebody mention that and something I was listening to about award shows. And it just occurred to me, like, yeah, well, that guy said, that's how I feel, too. And I say that because we're going to get to this Diddy story. There was a time when he was untarnished and very, very popular.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Young, handsome black star who made it all, had it all, and could be celebrated, you know, by CBS, NBC, CNN, and Fox if they wish to. But it's like now, we'll get to the story. I know you want to get to some text, but he was a darling for a while, but you say he's already become a little tarnished.
Yeah, especially over the last few years, there have been more and more allegations about P. Diddy.
What he does in his time and how he uses his power.
Yeah, because he became, well, you know, when he came on the scene, he was involved in the whole Tupac and Notorious B.I.G. and then both of their murders.
Mm-hmm.
His name swirled around those. And so he kind of started with controversy, right? And then he made himself a big, you know, worldwide star with music and the movies and the reality shows.
Right.
But now they're saying, like, okay, this was all really weird when he would get, you know, he brought up a lot of these young artists, kind of like Simon Cowell did with before American Idol and after American Idol, finds this untapped talent, usually in the form of young pop stars.
Bieber among them?
Yeah, right? Bieber was one of these who, I don't know how closely he worked with P. Diddy, but Usher, you know, a lot of these people who became massive pop stars, he kind of gave them their start. And there's been more and more allegations swirling around what life is like or was like for a lot of these, you know, musicians who
came up under him,
came up under P. Diddy. And then now you have his house is being raided by anti-human trafficking task forces. And it seems like it really escalated. Whatever they have against Diddy yesterday really blew up. And they said that he took his private jet down to Antigua, or I think they said he was headed for some island that doesn't have an extradition treaty with the United States. I'm not sure how accurate that is, but it could be the end of P. Diddy as we know him here in America after this all works its way through.
Looks like the wedge point was his ex-girlfriend, but we'll get to that. I know you want to get some text, but we'll get to Diddy and that story because it's going to be big.
Well, we got this traffic update. Thank you, Michael and Leanna, keeping us updated in the other room as well. Bayway is a problem this morning. He says I-10 completely blocked eastbound just outside the tunnel. Three semis got together, one jackknifed. And so he says eastbound, also hearing there's at least a disabled vehicle westbound right around the 32-mile marker. So some issues on the Bayway this morning. We've also been talking about this Baltimore, this ship in the Baltimore Harbor or Port of Baltimore, whatever they call it, cargo ship that took down the Francis Scott Key Bridge. And in the video, this happened around 1:30 this morning. In the video, you could see it appears the cargo ship loses power.
Yep.
And then the power comes back on, and then it loses power again.
Right.
As it slams into one of the supports underneath that bridge.
How about how quickly the contact in the collapse were just
instantaneous.
Yes. Yeah.
And you're talking about a mile and a half long bridge, most of it falling right into the water. Martin said, imagine this. A Navy buddy of mine back in the early 70s was on an aircraft carrier, and it lost power and was so-called dead in the water. That's moving without power while entering into, I think it was, Yokohama Harbor. Everyone scrambling around to figure it out, and my buddy, an E-4 at the time, saved the day by locating a blown breaker or something really simple like that after being told to shut up and get out of the way. And
wow.
He ended up getting an award from the president, is what Martin said here.
That's quite a story.
And there's already, you know how the internet works. Hopping on Twitter this morning, there's already people trying to connect the apparent loss of power of that cargo ship with hackers and saying, oh, mm-hmm. maybe it was hacked and then they deliberately steered that cargo ship into the bridge there so it would collapse. Now, that's taken a massive leap in something that happened overnight, mm-hmm. Where they're still trying to fish bodies out of the water.
And that video that you pointed out, too, it shows it clearly, the losing power or the lights going off and then the lights coming back on and mm-hmm. then off again. So some sort of electronical problem, obviously, not exactly what the issue was, but...
Yeah, and I don't know how all that works. I mean, I would think if the ship is without power, that even an external... force or someone piloting the ship, because the ship's without power. I don't know how that all works. I do know that we're in a strange day and age where something happens, mainland USA, and our first thoughts are, what country?
Who did it?
Who did this? Was it Russia or was it China? When you got a ship that just lost power in the Baltimore and the port there and takes this bridge out. But that's where we are in this day and age. You've got the government coming out and saying, hey, I mean, just yesterday they announced 7 more indictments for Chinese hackers. They don't know where these Chinese hackers are. I don't know if they know who they are. They say they do. But
it could be independent operatives too, Dalton. You think about it. It could just be somebody that. I mean, these guys are everywhere. They're and even if they're in Russia or in China, mm-hmm. it doesn't mean necessarily that they're part of the government. They're just guys that have
just hackers.
Yeah,
right?
Hackers.
But these ones in particular, yesterday they linked to the Chinese government.
Okay.
And then you hear about. So even here at our port, some of these cranes that they have, and there's been discussions about those being made in China. You have cameras on these cranes, and China can log in and look and see, depending on the numbers of these ships, where they're going and what they're hauling and everything. So anything that happens, even domestically, within American communities, looks like a foreign act now. As long as it was something that, ended in... either a loss of life or an economic hit to the country, that's going to come up.
And we talked about this economic hit to Baltimore and to the country because right now, as long as that bridge, at 1:29 this morning, it was a bridge. Now, it is debris.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you have all these ships in the harbor or closer to Baltimore itself at the port. I don't think there's. I'm sure they're going to devise a way for them to get to go where they have to go, but I don't know how quickly they can do that.
Yeah, and I'm not. Just looking at a map, and I'm not sure how they're going to do that. That's pretty much the way, right? Mm-hmm. That's the way into
in and out
the bay. And they said about 40 ships remain inside the port, and then of course you have all of the other container ships that were headed into the port who now can't get in.
Go.
So in addition to the likely loss of life, and hopefully that number isn't, high at all, you've got this economic hit as well. This is a major, major story this morning.
Major, major story. And Quinn didn't make it clear. I don't know if he went on that tugboat trip, or maybe they weren't on a tugboat, but with the gentleman who was a tugboat pilot, he happened to take a trip up to where the Amtrak disaster happened down here. 12 miles up the river, I believe is what he said. And you can't really reach that by land. So that would be fascinating to do. But I don't know if he did that with the intent of writing a story about it years later. He didn't, or he just took a ride up the river with a friend. I'm not sure. But it certainly puts everybody back to that mindset. And I was not even in Mobile when that happened, but wherever I was in Columbus, Georgia, and it was just like this, the story that the whole nation was talking about.
Yeah, and you can see why, obviously.
Yep.
Jason texting in, we were talking about school choice, and he says, people send their kids to private schools to get them away from the discipline problem of public schools, and the school choice thing destroys that if the private schools opt in. Hopefully they don't.
Can I say something to that?
Yeah.
That would be a concern, I know. I think one thing that let's see if the parents that decide to opt in, first of all, what private schools do opt in?
I think it's going to be a very low number.
Could be. And then what the parents that decide this is what they want to do for their kid, they're probably already the type of parents that have been very interested in their son or daughter's education mm-hmm. to this point. And so now I don't think it's going to be a free-for-all. I think you're going to have the parents that really care for their kids to do better, put them in an environment where he or she can do better. So you probably already have a parent or parents in the household that care about that stuff.
Well,
that makes sense?
It does, and it's almost like two different stories, though. What I'm interested in seeing, you've got, of course, your big city schools, public and private. You've got the Mobile Public School District, biggest in the state.
Yeah.
Plenty of private schools who are doing financially well around here. You could say the same thing in Huntsville and Birmingham, maybe less yeah. so about Montgomery. But what about all these smaller towns, you know, like where I come from, where you've got basically each town has a public school and then maybe a private school, but and even more rural places than Grove Hill mm-hmm. in Clark County. What is this going to look like? Because while there are a lot of private schools who are doing well financially in the bigger cities, most of the private schools around the state
yeah.
would be, you could consider them cash strapped.
Yeah.
Like they're not swimming in the dollar bills. So I think a lot of them are going to feel like, hey, that's extra revenue coming in.
It could be.
So there might be more of an evening out of the schools in some of these smaller, more rural communities where the private school says, yeah, we will take you up on that school choice thing. You see a lot more people leave the public schools in those areas for the private schools. I could see that kind of playing out that way.
That'll be interesting. I started my broadcasting career in a little town in East Georgia, Washington, Georgia, and it was just that. It was a town that had a modest academy or private school. The public school system, Washington Wilkes, was probably at the time, you know, it might have been 50-50 in the racial makeup of the school. And the academy was a small place. It was cash strapped, like you said. It was constantly trying to raise funds and raise money. So it could be a real different dynamic in mm-hmm. smaller communities than in the big city.
And then, you know, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, it might just look different city to city.
Yeah.
School choice might be a good thing here, might be a bad thing over here. But it's almost like we talk about with Pelosi and some of these bills in D.C. where they say you got to pass it to see what's in it. Now, I know the Alabama legislature wouldn't say that, but I think that's the case with this school choice. Kind of just got to see how things play out, right? A lot of texts about school choice. We'll try to get to some of those when we get back, and also more texts regarding this tragedy in Baltimore this morning. We'll get into those as well.
It is 8:48 on Mobile Mornings. Dan and Dalton and FM Talk 106.5, and thank you for listening.
Thanks, Kane. 853 FM Talk 106.5 in Mobile Mornings. And you're invited to the second annual Discover North Baldwin Outdoor Expo. It's coming up next Saturday, April 6th, at Bicentennial Park in Stockton. And we had a great time last year. I emceed the event then. Dan came by. Lots of folks came by.
It was a beautiful day, first of all, mm-hmm. which is going to be...
It's looking to be the case right now.
Hopefully going to be the case. But it was a lot of fun. There were so many vendors there with so many different interesting things you could talk about and learn about. It was neat.
Yeah, it was really cool. All things outdoors, all in one place, and it is an all-day event. 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Bicentennial Park in Stockton. April 6th, they'll have some great guests doing demos out there, including our own Captain Bobby Abruscato, who did a fantastic job last year, and also world champion turkey callers Kenny Weiss Sr. and Jr. They have a demo they put on as well. And then, like Dan mentioned, so many great vendors out there. Get to meet a lot of the local business owners involved with the North Baldwin Chamber of Commerce. And then the food is fantastic, too. I ate about as many crawfish as I could last year. So check it out, the second annual Discover North Baldwin Outdoor Expo. It's coming up April 6th at Bicentennial Park in Stockton. You can find out more at northbaldwinchamber.com.
Oh, you wanted to get to the text line here. And because of your vision, you can more easily do it than I can.
Gene said, we had a ship lose power in the port of Mobile and hit the container crane at Pier 2 years ago.
Wow.
And the captain was jailed, which created an international scandal.
Wow.
And yet, I wonder, you know, will there be any criminality here or not? But when you've got, you know, when you're talking about people who are coming into and out of port, a lot of times they are international, so I can see how that would make a scandal whenever you arrest someone, especially if they're not, you know, from the area.
Yeah.
This Michael says, even if the private schools opt in to school choice, they won't have to keep problem kids, and their discipline policies will remain in effect. Brian said all Catholic schools are in. Has that been confirmed? I haven't seen that all of the state or even just the Mobile diocese that they're opting into the school choice thing.
No, I haven't seen that announcement. I mean, the school choice thing just happened. So Brian, I think, has got information that we don't have. You know, as far as McGill, I've talked to football coaches who told me that any discipline problem is handled in the school. It doesn't even get to the field.
Really?
They make sure, or they pack bags.
Mm-hmm.
Like, here's the way you're going to do it. And he said it actually is taken care of before the kid ever comes to play sports.
Brad texted in, it's a tax credit. You still have to have the money up front. That will cut most people out. I'm not sure that's accurate. I mean, it's a refundable tax credit, but I think even if you don't pay enough taxes technically to get that refund, I think the state is going to split the difference. I think that's the way this works out, that especially considering that, you know, the first 2 years of this, they're only making this eligible for low-income families.
Yeah.
Most of whom, I would presume, don't pay as much in taxes.
So. Well, and they wouldn't have that money up front either.
Right.
Many of them.
So I think that that's inaccurate. I think that the state's going to make sure that students who opt into this program have that money via the state. And then a few texts about Trump and the judgment, and now he's saying he's going to pay this $175 million bond in cash. That meme has already made the rounds quite a bit with Trump answering. Did you see that yesterday, the video? As he does the press release out in front of the prison.
Yeah.
He said, what are you putting up as collateral? And he turns around and goes, cash. And then some woman in the audience goes, ooh, like, wow, Mr. Big Spender. But it does change things, especially something we talked about, I think, before. Most people were talking about it, and that's Truth Social going public yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Now they've got Trump in the – he goes from being cash-strapped, they're going to take all his money, seize his assets, to now he's on a list of the top 500 richest people in the world. On the exact same day they were expecting to start seizing assets.
Mm-hmm.
So quite the shift yesterday in the – world of Trump, but with Truth Social going public, technically, with the stake he owns in that, he picked up a $3.5 billion boost to his income. But of course, that's all wrapped up in the business, right? So we can't just pull that cash out immediately.
Exactly. And you know, where do these numbers come from? $454 million. Now this is a great price.
Mm-hmm.
Money asked for in the court was 170. What is it? 175.
175.
It's got 10 days to get there, right? See, he said it's not going to be a problem. If it was initially 175 million, would there have been an outcry then?
Oh.
But now the price being reduced like a pair of Jordans from $200 to $88.
Yeah, and they're saying that even if the Trump appeal falls flat and they say he still owes, that his lawyers, if they make the argument that's an excessive fine, kind of like Quinn said there, you'll probably see that money chopped down quite a bit.
8:59 on FM Talk 106.5, and the Jeff Porras on the way in about 6 minutes.